Sly'sOffice.com is brought to you by St. Vincent de Paul. The food pantry that they have helps people who have jobs but literally can't make enough money to get by or get assistance. Every month, whether it be a car repair, an unscheduled medical bill, or some other type of thing can throw people who work hard into some very difficult spots. So when you help St. Vincent de Paul, you help feed working people. St. Vincent de Paul in Dane County.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome to another podcast. It's Sly'sOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, Madison Teachers Incorporated, Madison Firefighters Local 311, and Madison Teamsters Local 695. Joining us now, Mark Pocan. He, of course, is our congressman for the 2nd Congressional District. And, of course, people listen to these podcasts all over the place. The 2nd Congressional District is Madison's surrounding area and the city of Beloit, thanks to gerrymandering. Congressman, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Sly?
Good. And you would gladly return Beloit to the 1st Congressional District where it made more sense, right?
I don't know if I would return Beloit gladly is the language, but I know that when I grew up, Beloit was part of the 1st Congressional District.
Not that you don't love Beloit, because it's a great town. And Beloit's actually making a lot of progress, isn't it?
They are. And, you know, I'll tell you, good friends of mine like Dan Shoof and a lot of other folks down there, it's a good community. I love Beloit College. But, you know, growing up, Beloit was always part of the 1st Congressional District when Les Aspin and others were in Congress. So,
Shouldn't these congressional districts make some sort of geographic sense?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, we split Rock County currently, but they clearly got rid of Beloit because they wanted to make the 1st Congressional District less Democratic. So it wasn't done for the right reasons.
Right.
That's the most valid, you know, thing that you could point out. You know, I mean, it's not as bad as, quite honestly, I've seen in Texas and Pennsylvania and a lot of other
North
places.
North Carolina. Yeah, some of those districts. But you would support reforming the way we draw districts?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the Iowa model is the best model. You have a citizens panel following the criteria they have to. You're not asking elected officials to decide if, you know, they want to pick who's going to be in their district, who's going to select them again, rather than let it be something that's independent, done on the proper criteria, and then you run based on your merits. And it works very well, I think, in Iowa. They do it somewhat like that in California and Arizona, and I think we'd behoove ourselves to go that route.
All right, the healthcare debate is bubbled to the top again. By all accounts, the big donors, Koch brothers and others, basically threatened the Republicans with cutting them off if they didn't kill the Affordable Care Act. Would you agree?
I've seen reports of that. What I do know is that, you know, they're on this desperate push to get something done by September 30th so that they can get around the rules of Congress and do this process that allows them to do what's called reconciliation and end run around the 60-vote rule otherwise that they would face in the Senate. So, you know, this is like the last effort they have, right? It's a proposal. It's kind of hanging out there. They're trying to piece it together. The problem is it's actually probably the worst of all proposals because based on some estimates we've seen, 32 million people, another 10 million people, would lose health care based on their other plans. And it does things like allow states to decide if they're going to get rid of things like pre-existing conditions for insurance or essential health benefits, whether or not you'll pay more if you actually, have a heart disease or something else, are all going to be up to people like Scott Walker. And, you know, we know Scott Walker was the first governor, I believe, in the nation to say that he would consider giving up pre-existing conditions. And then since then, he realized that was not very smart politically to actually tell the truth, that what he would do, and then try to say, well, we don't know a final proposal. Well, we now know a final proposal, Sly. We know that this is the proposal, that if this doesn't go through the Senate, nothing's going through the Senate. If it goes through the Senate, it has to come to exactly exact same way to the House. This is the time we need to know if Scott Walker is going to say that you don't have to cover pre-existing conditions in Wisconsin, or if you don't have to cover some of the essential health benefits like mental health coverage or maternal care or prescription drugs, or if he would stand up and say, you know, even though this provision is going to allow people to be charged more with pre-existing conditions, I won't let this happen in my state. Now is the time for Scott Walker to answer that before anyone from Wisconsin should ever vote on this.
The senior senator from Wisconsin, Ron Johnson, was on Morning Joe the other day, and Mike Barnicle asked him this question.
Okay, Senator, let's try this one. And this is a pretty simple question, I think, because I'm a pretty simple person. There's a family...
Well, so, you know, Mark, it's a pretty complex problem, so that's part of the problem with simple questions. There are no simple answers. There are no easy solutions.
There have to be simple answers for the people who you represent, and here's one of them. Somewhere in Wisconsin, there's a family with a 9 or a 10-year-old child with cystic fibrosis currently covered under what you call the disaster of Obamacare. Can you tell that family that their premiums under your proposed bill that you're about to vote on, their premiums will not go up?
They certainly shouldn't go. They should be going down. Obamacare artificially doubled premiums nationally. So again, the state of Wisconsin will definitely get more funding because we've been really disadvantaged under Obamacare funding scheme right now.
So
I'm begging you. A yes or no answer here. I am begging you.
Can you guarantee that premiums won't go up under Obamacare? I just pointed out individuals that are busting it, that are working hard, don't get subsidies. They're without coverage. Some of them have pre-existing conditions. So there are no absolute guarantees other than if we don't do anything, 90,000 notices, $5 billion in fines, premiums will remain doubled. They'll continue to skyrocket unless we inject tens of billions of dollars into a failed system.
Does that pass the Kimmel test?
No, you know, that's either ignorance, it's either deceit, or it's both ignorance and deceit. But, you know, I think he's trying to evade what the answer is, which is, yes, that family will pay more, very likely, in Wisconsin or some other states. It's estimated one out of every two people will be in a state that's going to have different provisions when it comes to this. And, you know, like I mentioned, heart disease is probably a $50,000 add-on. Cancer could be $100,000. There's different estimates that are out there. This is what this bill will bring you. So, you know, for him to evade it and try to talk about something else, he's not answering the direct question, which is real people are going to be hurt.
This has been really just a horrible time period for people that are, you know, in limbo because of this system. And there are some that are very angry right now that the debate over a single payer system is being brought up by Bernie Sanders and some others. What is your feeling about that?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is to find some new reason to try to put this out there. But let's face it, this Congress under Paul Ryan and this Senate under Mitch McConnell and this White House under Donald Trump is never going to pass a single-payer Medicare for all. So that's a completely ridiculous, false comparison. What they're trying to do is kick off the tax reform that they desperately want to do for their corporate masters and their financial benefactors for their campaigns, and they'll do anything and say anything to get that done.
What is your feeling as to if the Senate were to pass this Graham-Cassidy bill, what do you think would happen in the House?
Well, you know, I think it's very likely that it would pass, and, you know, I think there's some people that are being identified. I think last I saw 16 people represent a Republican district where their Republican governor doesn't support this, and, you know, they're targeting them and others. But, you know, this is very real, and they kept it kind of stealth, you know, right? I think there might have been an intentional subterfuge when they had Lamar Alexander negotiating with Patty Murray trying to figure out a bipartisan solution to fix the Affordable Care Act, and then all of a sudden that just ended, went dead silence, and then this came out. And I think they tried to see if they could pull a fast one. And quite honestly, Sly, I get worried because if you Google this and Google some basic questions about it, because they're not going to have a CBO score, Congressional Budget Office score, we don't really know exactly what all the ramifications are and what exactly is fully in this.
Well, so, it, you know, honestly, none of these people keep their promises and their words. I mean, if you listen to Paul Ryan during the debate over the Congressman Ryan over the debate over the Affordable Care Act, if he were to go through with this, he'd be going back on everything he said back then. Lindsey Graham, who weeks ago was talking about the Cornhusker kickback. Well, what about Montana and Alaska? Isn't it remarkable that those two states are getting a pass out of all 50? Right? I mean, do any of these people have any sort of consistent ideology?
Yes, their consistent ideology is they want to stay in office and they want to raise a lot of money from people who want to get rid of the Affordable Care Act.
But that's not so good if you have a kid with cystic fibrosis.
No, you know, we had a press conference on Thursday with a mother whose 5-year-old son has had 3 heart surgeries already, and talking about how he's going to hit lifetime caps. Another thing, will Scott Walker allow that to go away in Wisconsin? I think he will on all these things. I don't think he cared. He hasn't cared about the people of Wisconsin yet. Why would he suddenly now? And instead, he's going to do whatever the national elite in the Republican Party wants. So all those things are at risk, and it's so wrong. This week has really upset me in that, up to this point in healthcare, it was a fair debate. We could put calls into the office. We were doing what we could. We were winning on it. Now they're trying to pull a fast one by doing it covertly. And, we're getting people awakened to it. But as I Google search this myself, I'm not finding answers enough that people can even talk intelligently about it. I'm afraid they're going to really just pull a complete fast one and put something through that even they don't know what they're voting on.
Well, I would say, we're dreaming, they're scheming.
Exactly.
So, if they were to, if they were to pass this god awful bill, you hate to think of in terms like this, but what's going to happen politically?
Well, unfortunately, I don't even think about the political terms because it's just so devastating the human real terms of people losing health insurance. And, the other thing that's, I think, important to point out and hasn't been pointed a whole lot is after 2026, there's a fiscal cliff. There's no money going to the states on health care. So this is not a solution at all. This is a temporary Band-Aid fix to say they replaced the Affordable Care Act. This is an outright repeal, period. And, I'm just more worried what that devastating impact will be on so many people who we found needed health care through the Affordable Care Act. 20 million new people got brought in the system. So, can we argue that maybe it'll be good for us politically? Yes, maybe. But, Sly, I'm not even there yet.
Well, it is very interesting that this morning on Morning Joe, of course, this podcast is being recorded Friday morning, September 22nd. One of their commentators was Catty Kay from the BBC. She is a citizen of the United Kingdom, and she's blah blah blahing about Bernie and his radical plan. I thought, my God, you've got universal coverage that even Margaret Thatcher wouldn't touch.
Yeah. Again, there's so much hypocrisy around this issue because it's such a big part of the economy. I think the most telling part, Sly, is where has been a single press conference of theirs with medical professionals, hospital administrators, patients, anyone within the healthcare industry that's saying this is an improvement, we need to go this direction. Clearly, they don't have that on their side. This is all about getting rid of Obamacare because they said they were going to and trying to live up to a commitment, whether it's logical or not, and start major tax reform for the wealthiest in this country. That's all this is about.
I go to Canada frequently. Capitalism is alive and well in Canada. And yet they have a single payer system. They run it through the provinces, so there is some local control. It's a universal system, but the payment is run through the provinces. Why is that considered radical? There's still doctors, there's still hospitals, there's clinics. When people get sick, they go to the doctor. What is so radical about that?
Well, I would argue it's not radical to the vast majority of people if you start looking at polling. And I can tell you, while it's somewhat anecdotal, it's a lot of anecdote building up. Every single town hall I've done, both in my district and in Paul Ryan's district, of which I've done four now this year. When you get talking about healthcare, there's real concerns about people losing coverage, and inevitably it gets to the conversation of Medicare for All or a single-payer system, and that gets the largest response of any issue we talk about in the entire town hall. So I think people, again, are ahead of elected officials on this issue. And we really need to hear what the people are saying, which is they want to make sure health care is a right in this country, like it is in Canada and most of Europe and every other westernized country.
If we had a functioning democracy, you know, you didn't have an opportunity to serve with him, but he was a pretty progressive congressman. Dr. Kagan always talked about the one thing that should have been added to the Affordable Care Act was consumers having the ability to know what the costs of things are so they can shop and compare.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of things. I mean, that you could do a marginal improvement here and a marginal improvement there. At some point, I just think I'm tired, I guess, of the margins when it comes to healthcare. If you're sick, and you know you can go to a doctor and not have to go bankrupt because you have coverage, that's good for the person with a family member who's sick. That's good for the employer, so they don't have a sick employee coming in because they have to be, working. They've got coverage. It's good for the community. It's good for everybody to have a healthcare system that's comprehensive that everyone's included in. So at some point, we have to have that bigger, broader conversation. And then, there's a lot of little things we could do that might be maybe a little better than Canada, maybe a little better than, Norway, go on and on. But the bottom line is we just have to get to that system that delivers health care to everyone.
You're listening to SliceOffice.com. Congressman Mark Pocan will continue this conversation next.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
John and I approach personal injury cases in the same way. We want to be certain that our clients are treated fairly, that our clients are comfortable, that our clients know they can trust us to get the best result for them.
It's our professional responsibility to make certain you are fairly and fully compensated. Most of our cases are settled without a trial.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
You're listening to SlysOffice.com. I'm Sly. Joining me today is Congressman Mark Pocan, who represents the 2nd Congressional District in South Central Wisconsin. You recently took a little field trip to Massachusetts with your colleague Jim McGovern and was there for a town hall. Why?
Well, I think it's important, as much as my job is to obviously represent my constituents and listen to them and bring their values to Washington, I kind of got to get an idea of what people are talking about around the country. And, Jim invited me. He's, I think, one of the outstanding voices for, social justice in this country.
He's even better than Louis Gohmert?
Oh, Sly. He's a good colleague, and he asked me to come out, and I was very glad to. Because
where would you put him next to Glenn Grothman?
Glenn would be somewhere in a sub-basement dungeon.
Oh.
And
well, he lived in his parents' basement for years. That's interesting you say that.
Oh, but there's a big difference. Jim McGovern's a progressive, compassionate guy who's been in Congress for about 20 years, and it was good to hear the concerns that came up in Western Mass because, it's the same things we hear in so many other parts of the country. It shows where there is that, commonality among real people. If you have town halls, you will hear from real people unless you're, doing what Paul Ryan and others have tried to do when they have a town hall, just invite certain people. But when you listen to everyone, certain kind of truisms come out there, and I think that, everyone should be required. You shouldn't get a paycheck if you don't have a live town hall, in my opinion.
So what did you learn by going to Massachusetts?
Healthcare was probably one of the biggest conversation points. War and peace. I mean, people are really concerned with what's going on in North Korea and, the president's kind of cavalier attitude in the Middle East and Afghanistan, and that came up repeatedly. DACA came up. A lot of people very concerned about how we're treating 800,000 people as some kind of potentially a bargaining chip so the president can get a victory somewhere because he can't find it anywhere else. A lot of the common themes that I hear when I'm in South Central Wisconsin.
So you are co-chair of the Progressive Caucus now. Explain what you're able to do within that organization and how that fits into the future of Democrats someday, maybe not in my lifetime, but hopefully someday, being the majority party in Congress again.
Sure. Well, first of all, we're the largest values-based caucus. So we currently have about 75 members, the largest within the 190-some members that we have. And, you know, a lot of what we do is try to, you know, promote alternative progressive public policy, especially during this time of Trump. So it's not just, you know, it's one thing to say no and fight the bad ideas, which come quite often from this administration and this Congress, but it's also showing a different path forward. Medicare for All is one of those issues. You know, John Conyers, one of our members, has been the sponsor of that bill. And while Bernie Sanders recently introduced a bill in the Senate to incredible fanfare, and he's got 17 senators on it, you know, a little over a third of the Democrats, we have had this bill for multiple sessions in the House. We have 117 co-sponsors, which is over 60% of the House Democratic Caucus. I mean, I think what you're finding is a lot of the ideas that maybe are really great ideas but not quite in the mainstream of the Democratic Party yet, we put out there and we kind of build the support for. So we've done that around high-speed financial transaction fees. We've done that around a lot of the student debt issues. We're doing that right now around health care. And I think that's our goal, is to make sure that, you know, when we finally do have power, that we're putting those, you know, positive people supported ideas at the forefront, so that we don't have a bunch of corporatist ideas about, you know, who else we're going to give a tax break to that's already very wealthy. Instead, how are we actually making government work for people so they have every opportunity possible?
Well, I'm glad you brought up corporatists, because I think sometimes things get falsely put in the left-right paradigm as opposed to either a democratic solution or a corporate solution. I think sometimes people miss that. Let me play devil's advocate for a moment, though. You're touting that your caucus came up with a plan earlier than what was brought up in the Senate. Isn't it progress when it's brought up in the Senate, considering some of those senators aren't necessarily in safe seats and they, you know, they're advancing the ball? Most of the congressional seats that are probably represented in your caucus are pretty overwhelmingly Democratic.
It's great progress, because, as you know, the Senate operates much slower, I think, when it comes to issues like this.
Much slower.
It wouldn't have happened had it not been for all the hard work that happened for multiple years and multiple Congresses building support in the House of Representatives, because some of those people were members of Congress before they went to the Senate and had maybe been in support as part of what they were doing. So I think that, you know, I didn't mean it to say it was slighting. It's just, I think sometimes, you know, when the Senate burps its news and the House can be working hard on something for a decade and no one seems to ever report it. In this particular case, I mean, it's significant that the Senate finally has a bill and they have 17 sponsors, which is significant for the Senate. But I think, you know, to really give people even a better idea of how real this is as an idea, over 60% of the Congress, including people who are new Dems and others that aren't your most progressive members, are sponsors of the bill in our House. And I think that's really significant for people to know. I mean, we only have 75 members of our caucus, and we have 117 co-sponsors.
Do some of your members that are in the Progressive Caucus have seats that are vulnerable, that are, you know, swing seats?
Yeah, Rick Nolan in Minnesota, absolutely. Matt Cartwright in Pennsylvania is being targeted by a multimillionaire Wall Street guy. Yeah, we've got a number of folks that are in pretty tough areas that we're going to have to work hard to make sure we defend their seats.
Let me ask you about Wisconsin 2018. The person that held your seat, Tammy Baldwin, is running for re-election, and there's a bidding war in the Republican primary between one candidate who has one wealthy family supporting him, and this candidate has got Diane Hendricks supporting her. This is Leah Vukmir. She was on Mike Gushay a couple weeks ago, and he asked her about Alec.
But that was quickly followed by somebody from the state Democratic Party, Martha Lanning, the chairwoman, who said that you were a national leader of a billionaire's special interest group. Well, that's obviously a reference to your association, close association with ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. How are you going to respond to that in the course of the campaign?
Sure. The left, of course, is very fearful that I am going to be the person that is taking on Tammy and that I will have a very strong campaign against her. I'm proud of my association with an organization that believes in limited government, free markets, and federalism. Anyone who knows me knows that those are the principles that got me elected. Those are the principles I used on day one when I knocked on doors. I really believe that the government closest to the people is the best government to solve the problems for the people. And we've gotten so far away from that. So we need voices in Washington that are going to say, you know what, this isn't the role of the federal government. We need to have people who are going to be strong enough and will actually do that.
Are you going to be supporting Leah Vukmir in her run for the U.S. Senate?
First of all, she kind of forgot what the question was, I think, but she got her talking points out. That's fine. I mean, so, you know, let's face it. You know, so far, the two announced candidates, including Leah Vukmir, are backed by billionaires. Leah Vukmir has spent a career doing the work of billionaires in the state legislature. We hear there may be a multimillionaire, Eric Hovde from Dane County, also running. So you're going to have, you know, really rich people and people backed by really rich people who've worked their careers for really rich people running, and then you're going to have Tammy Baldwin. I mean, right now I like the equation. I think Tammy's done an exceptional job of getting around the state. You know, she is probably the national leader around Buy American and a lot of other initiatives that have wide popular support. But it's an off year, as you know, right? You know, the turnout is going to be likely down from a presidential year, and that hurts Democrats in the state. So our goal is to figure out how to get every single voter who wants to make sure that we're doing the right thing rather than, you know, someone like Leah Vukmir in the Senate.
But isn't it fair to say, Mark, that when Leah Vukmir says that ALEC is a bipartisan group, you're proof positive that it is? You were a member of ALEC.
I think when she uses that, if she wants to even scratch the surface on that, we will have a very interesting conversation. But I didn't even hear her talk. I don't think she said ALEC in her answer, did she?
She did later on. I played you the shorter clip, but she called it it's a bipartisan. The truth is, ALEC's for as big a government as they possibly can.
Yeah. Now, you know, and I remember one of my first meetings I crashed of theirs. You know, she was the head of the like education task force, telling people not to take federal money to expand healthcare back before it was even fashionable. So she's been a Tea Party person before there was even tea brewing.
She must have been one hell of a nurse, huh? She was a nurse.
I have no response, Sly. I can only get in trouble when you ask me questions like that.
That is my goal, my friend. That is my goal. Finally, let me get your response to Senate candidate Roy Moore. He is running for the seat left vacated by Jeff Sessions. And I'm thinking to myself, when Russ Feingold first went to the Senate, Howell Heflin held that seat. He was not a liberal, but he was not an extremist. He was a conservative Democrat who was reasoned, who worked in a bipartisan way within the 40-yard lines of American politics. Jeff Sessions was a big departure from that. And now we have a man who is in all likelihood going to win the race, the primary, and probably the general, who says that evolution is fake, that homosexuality should be illegal. He has defied the United States Supreme Court and been removed from office, not once, but twice. What does that say about American politics in 2017?
You know, I think it says a lot about what Donald Trump and even prior to him, the Tea Party has done to this country. I mean, the Tea Party, in my opinion, was largely created out of a mix between racism when Barack Obama got elected and people who just really didn't trust and hated the government. And then the Koch brothers and others put a bunch of funding into it. Suddenly they had a Frankenstein monster they created, didn't quite know how to handle exactly. And then this is what you get. You get, you know, when Louis Gohmert looks like a moderate compared to someone who gets elected, you have a problem. And Roy Moore would certainly be I think the most far right person and far, you know, out there person
in federal elected office.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting as Donald Trump is backing the current
Luther judge
appointed, right?
Luther Strange. Uh-huh.
Which means, you know, he might have a big defeat this weekend, and we'll have to see how all the tweets come out to prove otherwise.
It's kind of shocking what has happened.
You know what, Sly? This year, I've lost my ability to be shocked.
You're no longer shockable?
No. You know, if someone says something, I generally, you know, I'll still try to confirm that he actually tweeted it. But, you know, the problem is the answer is usually yes. I mean, we've just hit a new level. This is now a reality show. This is barely a federal government.
There you go. Congressman Mark Pocan with us at SlysOffice.com. Thanks for joining us today.
Of course, Sly. Thank you.
For more wisdom like that, drive home with Sly on the Big AM 1380 and the Big FM 93.7.
You like that?